I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Jeffrey Alford, along with his wife Naomi Duguid, have recently published their sixth cookbook together, but to call it a cookbook would be a misnomer because it's actually a lavishly photographed book with stories and fascinating cooking. The book is called Beyond the Great Wall, Recipes and Travels in the Other China, which gives us a view of the country and their food that perhaps we're not familiar with. This isn't that shopping mall takeaway we're familiar with. Rather, we see a more ethnically diverse part of China whose cooking is geographically varied. Jeffrey Alford joins me now here in Vancouver. For over 25 years, together and separately, they have traveled the world sampling local cooking and street food, taking photos and writing these books, which have won numerous awards. Beyond the Great Wall is published by Random House and retails for $70. HotSourSaltySweet.com is their website. Do check it out. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Jeffrey Alford. Good morning, Mr. Alford.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How many months a year do you travel?
Oh boy, it varies. We used to take our kids out of school every second year, and we'd take them out November, December, January usually, and then we'd be traveling with them, and then Naomi and I also usually go about 1 month just as one person. So collectively, you know, we'd have about 5 months every 2 years, and then in the other year, you know, Naomi and I both go once or twice out by ourselves. But it's all changing now because both our kids are just now in university. So we don't really know. And we're changing. A few years ago, we bought an apartment in northern Thailand in Chiang Mai, and we didn't really have a plan. We'd always said if we were going to do it anywhere in the world, we'd do it there. And so we saw something on the internet, and we went over and bought it. And so it sort of seeped in a funny way. But now we really, we're really liking having a base in Asia. And so this year, I've just been on the road constantly, pretty much for a year, which I don't like moving around that much. But so again, all to say, you know, it sort of changes year by year.
And when you're in northern Thailand,
yeah,
I'll ask you about the apartment in just a sec. But when you're in northern Thailand, that's a sort of centralized place where you can travel to any part of Asia, really.
It sure is. It's fabulous. Yeah. It's a university town, sort of, in northern Thailand. And, you know, in an hour, you're in China, really. You can be in the afternoon, you could be in Tibet, you could be in South India, you could be dropped over to Vietnam and to Laos and places like that. So it's, we think it's about as central as you can get with an airport that works.
And what compelled you to choose Thailand? Was it cost?
Well, cost has something to do with, a multitude of factors. We've always said, we've various times lived as a family, like 6 months in Thailand or something like that. And we've lived a lot of different places, but we've always thought that in Thailand, people accept us as it were, on a Thai standard. You know, we'll rent a house for $75 and a motorbike, and nobody finds that odd. You know, other places where we would really also like to live, you know, sometimes we're always dealing with being a perception of being a foreigner and how somehow we're supposed to live differently or something. And in Thailand, we just never feel that way. So, and then we work primarily in the States, actually, and we make U.S. dollars and we've been going back and forth to Asia all this time. So we knew that the U.S. dollar had tanked everywhere in the world, and except in Thailand. And so when we bought it, it was still a high value, and then it was, turned out to be a good thing. The main reason we bought it was I'd go on the internet just for fun at night, you know, and look at things. And you can only buy a condo in Thailand. Foreigners are only allowed to own condos. And I saw one advertised in the neighborhood that I know best, right by the old Central Market. And I thought, I've never seen a building there. I can't believe that this exists. And so we called, and sure enough, it's a building, and that I just never seen it. And also, the apartment was on a corner, looking north and east. And we'd always thought we want a corner, you know, because we want light and again, sort of thinking that I might be making the most stupid mistake I've ever done. But it's just been incredibly good.
And so this book deals with China. How many times have you been to China?
Oh, boy, I don't know. Like, I think collectively we've been there about 25 times, something like that.
And when you're in China, let's say the last trip that you were there, how long were you there for?
A month.
And do you find that a month is a good time wherever you're going?
Well, it's what we sort of, no, I prefer to be someplace for several months. But, you know, just the fact of work and kids and life and a month for many years, 3 weeks was what we could do. But a month, when we knew, but the thing about traveling in China, especially in these areas, is it just takes time. There's no way to hurry it. And, you know, if you're going to go all the way, then we sort of extended it to a month. But, you know, when we had the apartment in town now, we just crossed the border and we're in the region where we're writing about. So that became a lot easier.
So in this book, well, talk to me about some of the places in this book that you go to in China. They're not the urban centers that we're familiar with, are they?
No, they're the opposite. You know, we have to work out of airplanes sometimes in the urban centers, but the focus of the book is there's four distinctive regions. One is sort of Mongolian, Inner Mongolia there. One is the Taklamakan Desert, the old Silk Road area in the west, with, you know, Muslim population primarily. And then there's Tibet and Tibetan Plateau. And then there's Yunnan Province and Guizhou, which is more like northern Thailand. It's very, very hilly, big hills, and many smaller populations. And down there, it's, you know, pineapples and bananas and stuff. So, you know, it's about as far from Mongolian grasslands as you can imagine. And then similarly from, you know, Silk Road desert oases, and then high altitude Tibetan landscapes, you know. So what the regions all have in common is that people still lead a life very much like they were leading 50 years ago. So they still very much connected to where their food comes from and how food gets made and all that stuff. It's very, still very traditionally rooted.
And there's something we can learn from that as North Americans, isn't there?
Well, we always thought that's the compelling part for Naomi and I, is just being able to participate, and you know, that we feel like we've grown up in an era where, I mean, I thought food came out of a box, frankly. I grew up in a small town in Wyoming where, you know, I didn't know anything about, you know, agriculture. I didn't know any, you know, and so for us, we just feel like there's an immense amount to be learned, and we learn primarily in those agricultural areas or those, you know, smaller places.
And when you travel these areas, obviously you have a focus on food. I'm curious, do you ever get sick eating when you're traveling?
We you know, we do sometimes, but not much. And, but, you know, and who knows why. But the first time, you know, it's almost 30 years I've been traveling in Asia. And the first couple of years, I would get sick a lot. And now I very seldom really get sick that way, but maybe I'm smarter about groundwater and about what to eat and what not to eat, or maybe my intestinal flora is different. But we've watched our kids, and I think we can count on one hand the days that they've had a gastrointestinal problem in Asia, and they've been there a lot. So I think it's just a combination. China's a relatively one. Yeah, you're less likely to get sick gastrointestinally than you're likely to get sick from, you know, bad air quality.
My parents are Filipino, uh-huh. And I haven't been there in about 15, 20 years or so. And they were talking to me about going back there for a vacation, and they were suggesting perhaps that were I there not to drink the water. Is that something that you look after? Like, you mean, do you drink?
Yeah, I think in Philippines, you know, feels to me very much similar to being in Thailand. Like, you know, now there's bottled water so much. So, you know, people will generally. think that, you know, to what we often advise to people is just, you know, Philippines, I can't talk to it directly, but.
But I guess that's anywhere, even if you went to Europe or South America, even.
But, you know, like, we wrote a book about Indian subcontinent, and people would ask, you know, and we'd say, well, like, we work in a food world, you know, and we know that when we go to a conference in France or something, you know, people don't have their coffee at the same time, or they had an airplane ride, and maybe they have diarrhea, you know. But in France, they don't think anything of it. They just think they're having diarrhea. But if they come to India and they have diarrhea, you know, suddenly they're, you know, it's scary, you know. And that's when most of gastrointestinal things get worse, is stress plus, you know, a bad gut. I think sometimes people sort of almost worry themselves into getting sick. But I've been only briefly in the Philippines, but, just enjoyed some, you know, immensely fabulous food, and don't have any, you know, I'm not going to go, you know, I mean, the thing that you usually stop at is salad, right? Something uncooked.
Right.
But in Thailand, I eat salad every day, you know, there's nothing I don't eat. So I think Philippines is somewhere more in the Thailand scheme of things than I won't eat salad in India.
Right. In this book, walk us through some of the recipes and some of the dishes that you came across. Like, so sort of give us, what would be a breakfast that you would recommend?
Oh, breakfast. Good question. You know, again, we're talking about such distinctly different regions, but congee is even, you know, we think of it as Han Chinese, but it's also eaten by a lot of people. And congee is one of those things that, you know, like a hot rice soup that you can get really addicted to because of its sort of plainness, but it's hot and it's in the morning. And in Tibet, they have sampa, which is ground roasted barley flour. And it just, again, has this, you know, wonderful aroma and taste, and it's something that you can eat every day and be happy. The same in the far west, you know, what we think of as Chinese Central Asia, as incredible breads from tandoor ovens, and they'll be, you know, cranking them up early in the morning, and you know the dry air, a lot like Afghanistan, for example, and then you'll just have this whiff of bread baking in a clay oven, you know, and oh, it's just, you know, hot tea out there and flatbreads fresh out of the oven. So again, you get a sense that, I mean, it's in the Yunnan, in the tropical area there, sticky rice eaten as it is in Laos. You know, you'll have sticky rice, and then you'll have some really spicy salsas to dip your sticky rice in.
And for lunch, what is there? This is the one thing that surprised me about the book, in reading about the book, was just how diverse Chinese food is.
Yeah.
I mean, we think of, you know, I mentioned off the top the mall food that we all have, or the food that we would get, you know, at a Chinese restaurant here in Vancouver, for example. It's awfully diverse, isn't it?
Oh, just unbelievable. Like we say in the introduction, you know, if you drew a map of the world, and instead of having national boundaries, you had boundaries based on food and ethnicity. You know, everywhere, every country in the world would look different, but China would probably look the most profoundly different. Because you have, you know, people don't, we think of China as this sea of Han Chinese, and, you know, in Shanghai and Beijing, but it's an incredibly diverse country. Just in those 130 million people that we're writing about, there's more than 50 different languages spoken, and there's 8 different language families, you know, completely different language families. It's just that most of that diversity is found in regions that people know least about because they're more isolated.
Do you have a favorite sort of food from China?
Well, I think, you know, when we say that there's a chapter on the noodles, and the noodles could have taken over the whole book. They're all made by hand, you know, flour, salt, water, and maybe an egg. But then you have all these amazing things, ways of making noodles. And I think that was where that would be sort of the icon chapter and icon dish from the book is all these noodles made by hand.
And all made by flour. Are there other things that they use instead of flour, perhaps?
Well, the biggest difference is flour made from rice or flour made from wheat. And most of these are made in this situation from wheat, which is easier. Rice noodles are can be tricky, but those are the biggest, you know, and there's noodles made from other things, but we didn't include those.
And did you find that there's a great Western influence in Chinese cooking that's emerged, perhaps, in China? Like, I mean, not just fast food, but other cuisine and other things like that.
Well, again, yeah, I mean, we're just so outside urban area, so it's not existing at all. It doesn't.
And that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a very good thing. I mean, from my point of view, I mean, the whole reason we wanted to write the book is to some extent, you know, culture is preserved or held on to through food, and you know, when you know, through food and language. And you know, I remember I'm American, and then I now am a citizen in Canada, and I remember I had to go be sworn in, and the guy swearing in this, you know, room of 150 people, he said, you know, I only ask you one thing, you know, please hold on to your language and please hold on to your culture. You know, we're all richer if you hold on to it. And, you know, as an American, this is an extraordinary thing to hear somebody say, because in the States, people believe the melting pot or whatever, you know, and here, right up front, to say, hold on to your language and hold on to your culture. And I thought it was a really wonderful thing.
And the book has recipes, correct?
Oh, it's mostly recipes, yeah.
We all seem to, and this is a very sweeping generality, of course, we all seem to enjoy Chinese food, but we don't cook it because we think it's difficult. Is it difficult?
No, it's not difficult. Not. It's remarkably easy. I mean, we think, like, when my sense, food in China, when it gets expensive, I don't like it. Start getting weird, and it starts getting these ingredients that are not common. I like poor people food, you know, and I think most people living in Canada, you know, if they were to see that, you know, most people are like me, like, you just love those really basic good things. I lived a year in Taiwan, and I remember some, you know, food was the number one social event, and whenever we would go to a, you know, like a fancy restaurant or something, I hated it. It was just weird, you know. And I'd give me the noodle shop any day.
Are you working on another book now?
Well, I wrote a novel this winter, and I'm working on the last edits before I try and find a publisher. And then we're working, just starting out to work on a book that will be a cookbook that is going to be, you know, blatantly politically based, which is the Beyond Burma.
Really?
Yeah, because
In light of recent events, correct?
Yes. And you know, I mean, it's the longest war in the world, the longest still existing war, and it's another very good example. It may be one country, but in terms of who lives there, it's not at all one country.
Yeah, that's right. When you're in Vancouver, what do you eat? Do you go to a certain place? Is there a place that you sort of seek out?
I'm a you know, when I'm on a book tour, this time we went to almost 30 cities in the United States, and so I most often eat room service because I find I just need to you know, collect my thoughts, and it's just, and I'm often just one person, so I don't, you know, if there was a really good Mexican restaurant that I knew down the street, that's where I would be. But otherwise, I don't really go out and sit in restaurants by myself very much, unless they're kind of, you know, really on the cheap side.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on today, Jeffrey, and continued good luck with the book.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Jeffrey Alford, with his wife Naomi Duguid, are the authors of Beyond the Great Wall, Recipes and Travels in the Other China. $70 from Random House. Their website is hotsoursaltysweet.com, and they've got a new website, immersethrough.com. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Flynn.